Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
You hear a lot these days, if you spend time in circles that care about such things, you hear a lot about the death of the congregation, that the traditional model for congregational life is unsustainable, that with the church ladies of yesteryear now working, and less stigma around not belonging to a congregation, and people having so many more choices for how they spend their Sunday mornings, that because of all of these things and more, congregations are going to disappear in the next decade or two as some other, as yet undetermined, form replaces them. And I'm just not convinced of this. We do live in a world where our technology makes the world seem much smaller, but it also seems to help us put on blinders so that we only listen to those we agree with. We can self-select into online spaces that reaffirm our biases, and we can be connected without ever having to leave the house. Technology is part of what people worry about when they worry about congregational life's survival. Now, I love certain things about technology. I do not want to give the impression that I'm a total Luddite. I love, especially for church, certain things. For example, just last week, I sat down with Fred, who ably manages our AV techs that help us every Sunday, and I said to him that I wished we could live stream our services so that people who cannot be here physically can still watch and participate. We're not using it today, but I love the screen because it means that you're all looking up and out when you're singing instead of burying your faces in the hymnal. I adore video conference capability because it means if there's ice and snow, we can actually still have a meeting. There are so very many ways that technology is and will continue to help the work of a congregation. But there's something that makes me think a congregation will never disappear. We'll never all be sitting at home alone watching the live stream. And it's the heart of that Kenneth Patton reading from this morning. It's the heart of the congregation itself, which is connection, but this caring connection. In a piece in Psychology Today from 2016, Drs. Shobha Srinivasan and Linda Weinberger argue that aloneness can lead either to a sense of loneliness, a negative sense, or to a sense of fulfilled solitude, kind of like what Kenneth Patton was talking about, sitting together but feeling solitude, depending on the individual and the circumstance. But for those in whom aloneness manifests as negative loneliness accompanied by mental and physical effects, there are treatments, and that generally all of them involve increasing meaningful social interaction. In the piece they write, humans, because of necessity, evolved into social beings. Dependence on and cooperation with each other enhanced our ability to survive under harsh environmental circumstances. Although the survival threats of these circumstances have lessened in today's world, people continue to have a need to affiliate with others. In our advanced digital age, one of the prevalent concerns regarding the increasing emergence of loneliness is how we have become less caring of others. At one time, our very survival depended on trusting and supportive relationships. Fundamentally, it doesn't matter how technologically sophisticated we become, emotional connectivity remains a core part of being human. We need each other. Maybe not in the ways that characterized us evolutionarily, but for a need that remains essential for psychological survival. We need each other, they say, and yet there's this piece, this fear that we are coming to take less care of each other. For centuries, communities like this, parishes, churches, the people that attended the same local groups, they took care of each other. Someone was in need and meals were made, a barn was built, the children were looked after. Small communities knit tightly around a church home, theoretically, took care of one another. And you may not realize it, but that hasn't actually changed. And it remains one of the most essential functions of a congregation. How many of you knew before Marty said it that we have a caring committee? Very good. That's good. And pastoral associates, how many knew that we had those? Okay, but it's not everybody, and everyone needs to know. That's why we're talking about it today. How many of you have ever benefited from the services of caring committee or pastoral associates? Okay. In a community of this size, it would be very hard for the parish minister to attend to all the different individual needs. So we have these structures. The caring committee, as Marty said, is that group that sends a card when you're experiencing sorrow or joy. They're the ones that provide rides. They're the ones that bring you meals or a baby hat when you bring home a newborn, or they send you flowers in the hospital. This group of people stands ready to respond in all of these different, and we might say almost material kind of ways, when any congregant is facing difficult times or celebrating joyous times. If you're a part of the caring committee, can you raise your hand? There's a handful of you in here today. There's quite a few of them, more than are here this morning, but the reality is we always need more. We need more people willing to take care of caring for each other in this way. Julie McMurray, who isn't here this morning, and Mary Mogerly, I'm going to point to you, Mary, who so lovingly runs the kitchen every Sunday morning, are the co-chairs of the caring committee. So if you want to be on that list of people ready to knit a hat or make a meal or give a ride, those are the people to talk to. You can also just tell me, and I'll make sure that you find your way to them. The Pastoral Associates group does work a bit differently. They don't offer so much material support as they do emotional and spiritual support. They are trained. Each year, there's at least one training in lay pastoral care offered by our denomination in our area. Pastoral associates must attend this training, and also they must demonstrate some particular qualities that make possible the work of deep listening and loving presence that they are asked to do. A pastoral associate needs to be able to make their work not about themselves, needs to be able to sit in awkward and difficult silence, to be present without judgment, and perhaps most importantly, needs to be able to spot when it's time for someone with even more training to be called in. The pastoral associates here essentially take on cases, for lack of a better word, when it seems that someone is in need of longer-term care, more than just a single visit or a phone call, a pastoral associate commits to checking in over the long haul. If you're a trained pastoral care associate in this congregation, can you raise your hand? Okay, Georgetta and Marty, we have a couple. There are more than raised their hands this morning, but you can also see there we are definitely in need of more trained pastoral care associates. So if you are interested, again, talk to Martin, talk to me. We will find a way to help you get there. Beyond the caring committee and the pastoral associates, there's something else that happens here. We know it, Julie and Mary and Martin and I, we know that without any fanfare, you are already taking care of each other. We know that you're calling each other, you're bringing each other food, you're scheduling visits and organizing other people visiting. We know it's happening, and it is a wonderful thing, a beautiful outcome of a committed community working to build itself up over time. We really want you to know that you, whether you are in crisis or celebrating something wonderful or giving support to someone experiencing those, that you have the support of these structures too. You have my support and Dylan's support. You have these caring committee folks and the pastoral associates. But there's a little secret to how it works. We can't help and support if we don't know what's going on. So I know that your first thought might not be, I'm going to call the minister, or I'm going to call the caring committee, or the pastoral associates, but I hope you'll consider bumping it up to like your top five thoughts when something happens, because we're ready and we want to be there. That's part of the work of being together in a congregation, but we can't do it if we don't know what's happening. But this is the heart of what congregations do and have done for centuries. That word religion, it finds one of its deepest roots in the Latin word re ligare, to bind and bind again, to connect, we might say. taking a little bit of license. The creation of connections, the binding together of people, is the deep and foundational purpose of religion. And I know that some of you might say Unitarian Universalism isn't a religion, and we can have that debate another day, I promise. But I don't think we want to debate the connected nature of our congregational lives. The aspirational ideal that our congregation is a place where people feel connected and cared for and feel loved. That is what we strive for. We want there to be a clear way for each person who walks in the door to get their need for care met. Tell me about your despair, yours, and I will tell you mine, Mary Oliver declares. This is what we try to do, to share with each other the moments of spectacular glory and the moments of just crushing despair. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Over and over, the geese call to you, no matter how lonely. They remind you of your place. Geese fly in that V formation, and it helps them survive and thrive. As they move through the blue sky, they remind us that we too must fly in formation, that we too have a place among each other, that we too need each other in order to survive and to thrive, and that we do this by finding and building and creating over and over communities of real, deep connection that intentionally offer care to each other. We don't do it by being perfect or by being the best at anything, but simply by taking the gifts we have to offer and offering them as we are able. We do this by recognizing and prioritizing the work of caring for each other. Now, the government shut down this week, as I'm sure you know, and more comes out of the White House that would have been unthinkable not that long ago. There is so much to handle. And many of us are feeling the effects. I know I am not alone. That sense of anger that comes with so much stress, or the anxiety that comes from that constant layer of fear, and the feeling of being disconnected from our own reality a little bit. One of the best defenses we have against burnout, against defeat, against becoming completely disheartened and dispirited is to come back to the local communities of care. Remember what it is to lean on each other, to love each other, to care for each other over the course of a lifetime. Remember what it is to be willing to be scared and brokenhearted in front of each other. Remember what it is to feed each other and sit with each other, to show up for each other. Time, centuries teach us that this is meaningful work. Work that is the foundation of all the other work a congregation does. If you stripped away all of the justice work and the music and the art and everything else, you would still have people needing each other and caring for each other. All that other stuff comes, is possible, because we lay this solid foundation. We are able to reach our destination because we fly in formation. We need each other. This week, a colleague shared a poem with me titled What I Learned from My Mother, and it's by Julia Kasdorf. It goes like this. I learned from my mother how to love the living, to have plenty of vases on hand in case you have to rush to the hospital with peonies cut from the lawn, black ants still stuck to the buds. I learned to save jars large enough to hold fruit salad for a whole grieving household, to cube home-canned pears and peaches, to slice through maroon grape skins and flick out the seeds with a knife point. I learned to attend viewings even if I didn't know the deceased, to press the moist hands of the living, to look in their eyes and offer sympathy, as though I understood loss even then. I learned that whatever we say means nothing. What anyone will remember is that we came. I learned to believe I had the power to ease awful pains materially like an angel. Like a doctor, I learned to create from another's suffering my own usefulness. And once you know how to do this, you can never refuse. To every house you enter, you must offer healing. A chocolate cake you baked yourself, the blessing of your voice, your chaste touch. What anyone will remember is that you came, that you didn't let them fly solo down to the ground, unattended by the rest of the flock. Once you know how to do this, you can never refuse. Once you know what it is to fly in formation, when you've been the one needing support or the one offering it, once you know what it is to care in these ways, you can't refuse to offer that gift ever again. Not because it somehow becomes obligatory, but because I think you can't unlearn the depth of its meaning and value. And so you can't bring yourself to deny that deep connection to someone else. Each of you has, I'm sure, had occasion to be cared for and to offer care. And perhaps your skills run to baking a chocolate cake, or perhaps to the blessing of your voice or your chaste touch. Perhaps your gift is your presence, your listening, your knitting of blankets. I don't know. But what I do know is that a congregation exists, and the outward looking work of a congregation happens because people feel a connection, a care, and a trust that they will not be left to fall on their own. So whatever your gift, this right now, what I'm about to say, this is the call for you to offer it. Offer to this, one of your most local communities, the gift of your love and your care in whatever form you are able. If we can't provide for ourselves in this way, in formation together, we will never be able to build the world of love and care that we dream of. May we, as a congregational community, always be mindful of the joys and sorrows of our people, offering them what they need, providing compassionate attention and the all-important gifts of connectedness and healing, so that we might go out and change the world. So may it be.